Hey everyone, it's Jonathan, and welcome back to iHeart Movies. This episode is the long-awaited follow-up to our episode on Gremlins. Back in 2022, Nikki, aka Trivial Theater, and Dan, aka TYTD Reviews, joined me to talk about Gremlins for that year's batch of Christmas movies. And we meant to get to Gremlins 2 soon after that, but I guess it took a while because it's now 2024 and we're just getting to it. But better late than never, I guess, so join me and Nikki and Dan to talk about the insanity that is Gremlins 2, A New Batch. So this movie was insane. I don't think I knew what I was to expect going in. I thought it was just like a straight up sequel to Gremlins, and it was just like a live action Looney Tunes cartoon with Looney Tunes included.
Pretty much. It was my first time too. And as rightfully as you said, I was going into this, I thinking, okay, it's going to be lighthearted, maybe ride that PG-13 rating a little hard, similar to Ghostbusters or the original. But you know what? I quite like that balance. And I put it on, and it felt like the film was melting, for lack of a better expression.
It did halfway through.
Yeah, basically. Like, when I saw that Chuck Jones was in the credits for this, at first I was like, oh, okay, so, you know, maybe they're going to, you know, do some bits. And then they open, obviously, with the Looney Tunes cartoon. And I was thinking, oh, well, maybe that's just where his influence begins and ends. Maybe, you know, they just did this little twee kind of Bugs and Daffy thing to kind of, you know, lighten the mood. Obviously, a few years had passed since the first Gremlins film, and it had become a bit of a sensation for kids. So maybe they were trying to, you know, ease kids into the Gremlins franchise a little bit easier. But then that kind of Looney Tunes manic energy didn't stop. It just kept going.
It ramped up.
Yeah.
Well, they actually incorporated the sound effects of like any of the hiccups, burps, a lot of the other sound effects were from Looney Tunes properties.
That makes sense, because there was a few times where something would happen and it would be just a bizarrely cartoony sound effect.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. There was a wonderfully timed Wilhelm scream. It's like one of my favorite Wilhelm screams in cinema, where somebody falls off a balcony and you just hear the, ah! They kind of just drops.
It makes more sense than any of the more recent Wilhelm scream uses.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it was a really difficult situation for me because, like, and I don't know whether you guys would agree with me on this one. So obviously the first Gremlins film has a little bit more, I don't want to say complexity, but there's a little bit more light and dark being worked with. They're working with shades of comedy and drama and a little bit of horror, and they're kind of pulling a lot more in. Mm-hmm. And I feel that makes the original a bit more versatile. It means that you're kind of able to just throw it on and enjoy it whenever, really, because there's always going to be something that you'll like and some stuff that you can kind of go, well, you know, I'm not really feeling that today, but I can kind of live with it. Gremlins 2 throws itself wholeheartedly into cartoonism and into heavy comedy, and there are a few moments that are a bit gory, kind of lean into that PG-13 side of things again, but it's predominantly slapstickery. It's very much from the school of Stooge. And with it having such a strong vision for itself that is so bedded in cartoonery, if you're not in the headspace to really kind of be down for that kind of thing, it very, very quickly swaps from being a quite enjoyable watch to just absolutely insufferable. And when I put this film on for the first time, it was, I wasn't expecting it to go down that route, and I wasn't in the headspace for that kind of a film experience. So I was sat there for the entire film going, this is an amazing work. I hate it at the minute. I want to watch it when I want to watch a Looney Tunes cartoon. When I want to watch like proper zany comedy, I'm going to be here. But we're watching it for the purpose of this. I was just like, oh, this isn't timed well for me in terms of like where my head's at versus the film. So
I can see that. Now, see, for me, this would be a movie that I could turn on any time and just relish. Like, even, and I know, like you said, it is a movie of pieces more than it is a solid narrative, because by and large, there's not a lot of narrative to this. It's just, you know, the energy of it is so, like you say, so Looney Tunes inspired and oriented that it just, it's like it's on all of the drugs, but it's done in a controlled chaos way is for my liking. And like just watching the background, there's so many little things in the background that kept me intrigued. I feel like this is a movie that I could like, some of the energy gets a little bit over the top, but I just like in one scene in the bar, there was a gremlin in the background that had a gizmo, like a like I hate gizmo shirt. And like those little moments were like, it drew me back. And all of the classic references, like whether you're talking B movies, whether you're talking like just classic cinema generally, like there's a church at one point that's the church of Eva Marie, or sorry, of Saint
Saint
Eva Marie.
Marie.
Yeah. even down to the announcer, like the building announcer, like at one point he says to the owner of, and I missed what the car was, please move it, it's old and dirty. And there's just like all of these little moments that I just relish and love, and it's those little touches that makes you, even if Joe Dante, when this first came up, wasn't crazy about doing it, he went in and just whole hogged it, you know.
Oh yeah.
There was that passion for old movies, and that you know, just telling, you know, if you can't, you know, if you have to do the thing, you're gonna make it your way, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely. As well as that, just on the subject of your little jokes in the background, I think my favorite background joke in the whole film was when the really polite automated AI bot that's sort of talking throughout the film, and it's really obscured by the mixing of the audio, but it basically just over the intercom, it says, "We are happy to have you here employed at Clamp Industries, but please be aware we are automatically monitoring the number of keystrokes on your computer. Underperformance will result in termination." It's just like in the 21st century, in the age of remote working, that is so relevant even like now, you know.
Well, I would even say it has, and I know this came out before, I think it came out. Yeah, it came out before them, but like, it has bits of like the Bilko experiment or Office Uprising, where you get stuck in the automated building, and not that they're stuck per se, but they're still under the influence of the building and all the stuff that goes on. And that was kind of a fun little side thing too, even though this came before those pieces.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. There was another one actually thinking about it that made me smile, which was when they pull the fire alarm.
That's what I thought you were going to say first.
Yeah. It's instead of the normal sort of alarm, it's just something going, "Fire, man's creation of the greatest thing in the world. Everyone loves fire. In fact, this building is currently on fire now. Please vacate the..."
Stuff like that is why at a certain point I had to stop myself and say, this is not attempting to be a realistic sequel to Gremlins. This is just a live action cartoon.
Oh, 100%.
For me, it was the point where Leonard Maltin turned up and reviewed the original Gremlins. Yes. And then the Gremlins killed him.
And then not long after that, the movie actually burns in half, and then you have the whole scene in a theater of people trying to watch Gremlins 2, they can't. And then Hulk Hogan shows up to yell at the Gremlins.
And Paul Bartel fights the film editor because the Gremlins have swapped it to a nudie cutie film from the 60s. In my notes, actually, during that scene, in the notes I just wrote, "This is arguably the best and worst part of the film."
Well, and the fact that, again, the fact that Joe Dante, you know, there wasn't, from his perspective, I read that it wasn't really his story. He didn't really want to do it, but he took it and he made it something just so, and I don't know if it was a matter if he had, I would imagine he had quite a bit of control over what came out finally with this, but, or he had enough clout to make them, you know, make them listen to him. But there's so many of those moments. It's such a great satire. At one moment, they even start asking, like, well, like when he's in the when Billy's in the security room, they start asking, "So what are the rules? What if you're on a plane between time zones?" Like that whole line of questioning is, you know, anyone that's watched the original movie has asked those questions.
Uh-huh. Mm. I was thinking that as I was watching, I was like, this is all the stuff that I wondered about the rules, because the rules are so specific that they can't be anything natural.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
And I know, Jonathan, you're not going to be as familiar with this, but like it almost is within itself an MST3K episode.
I could see that, especially in certain areas. Yeah. Of like the brain gremlin. making comments about what they're doing.
Yeah, it does so much self-parody.
That was, for the record, my top three favorite gremlins in this movie were the intelligent gremlin. I thought that he was delightful. The electricity gremlin, I really liked him. And Bat Gremlin, because, you know.
I was not expecting the whole scene of them like drinking all the stuff in the lab and changing into other types of creatures. I thought that was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
That was neat. And the whole, like, again, like with Christopher Lee there and
Oh,
all
I
of
didn't even
the.
know he was in this movie. He turned up and my jaw dropped. I was like, Christopher Lee?
Oh, he was fabulous. Clearly, they're just enjoying the role. Like, I if he'd have told me that he didn't get paid for that and he was just doing it because he wanted to. He had two of the funniest lines in this film for me, which said very, very seriously. The first one was, "We can't let them get away. They'd only have to eat three or four children, and there'd be a public outcry," which is great.
There were so many good lines in this movie.
Oh yeah, and the other one he said was at the very beginning of the film when he's first introduced. It was something like he gets a parcel and he goes, "Oh, splendid! That must be my malaria." Oh, just babies.
The whole lines about different diseases and such, like, oh, it's always back ordered. And when then when he runs through with the pod people, like, pod thing, oh my God, he just randomly comes out like, what the hell's going
Yeah, no, he was fantastic in it. I mean, in a way, I kind of liked as well the very broad lampooning of kind of corporate America, and in particular of Donald Trump.
on? Oh,
Like,
yeah.
Clamp and Trump are basically one and the same. And it's all the little details that really made me smile. Things like when they're giving the guided tour to the primary school kids, and just as they're on the way back, they try and hock Clamp's autobiography to them. It's just like, and don't forget when you're leaving, kids, to pick up your autobiography from Clamp. It's like how I did it.
I mean, I did. I thought I like I could see the Trump parallels, but then Clamp is not that he's nice, but he's I feel like he's a lot nicer than Trump.
He's just he's
Yeah.
he, I think in that point in time, like, they were probably without the context that we have over the past 30 years by any stretch, but I think you get that kind of he's seeing, like, because he isn't really the villain of this, you know. It's kind of sort of gremlins and sort of the head of security, like Robert Picardo, but you do get that idea that it's he's like, what can I do to make myself look good, you know, whether it
Yeah.
was, you know, like he's sitting there shredding the gremlin at one point, and his tie gets stuck. It's like, oh, I like this tie.
That was another thing. He has, well, not just him, but like so many people, things would happen and they would have completely the wrong response. Like so, almost blasé, but mad about the wrong thing or upset about the wrong thing. Like somebody would just get attacked and then they'd be annoyed about this other thing that was going on.
It was an interesting dynamic, really, especially when Billy and Clamp finally get together and start doing stuff together. Because it reminded me, it had a very similar vibe to me, at least, as the bits in the beginning of Return of the Living Dead, where
Oh,
they're trying
yeah.
to get rid of the body and they're very sort of like, "What do we do? We'll try this. No, we can't do that. This will happen. What about this? No, we'll go." You know, it was very kind of, again, it sort of goes down that comedy kind of background, but it throughout the film. There was a lot of moments where I was watching it and just thinking, this reminds me a little bit of Return of the Living Dead in places. It's very kind of tongue in cheek and a little acidic in what it's trying to do, which was quite good.
Yeah.
That was another thing as well. I quite liked when Billy gets into the office on his first day or something, and that exec comes down to him immediately and has that really long talk about how his office isn't within regulations to Clamp standards. And he just gives this very impassioned speech where he's like, "I reckon everybody in the office would love a world's greatest lover mug or a rest your butts here ashtray. But where would that lead us? A flea market."
I did have to laugh, and it's such a thing of that time, but the fact that they made issues of plants and things like that, but all of the smoking that was going on in that scene. I think it
I
was
thought
just
that too. Like
the
the his boss, she had the
yeah.
cigarette the whole time. I was like, this would not fly today. Like not even in a movie, but like in a public area like that.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Did you notice as well they were playing all of the sort of programs they were playing in the background on Clamp's cable network?
Oh yeah, it was like Octoman and what was the one?
They were showing both versions of It's a Wonderful Life, the color and the black and white version,
Did
which I
they?
thought was yeah.
I missed that. Oh my God.
On the background of one of the screens, they were showing the black and white version, and then they cut to another screen, the color version's on there as well. So
Well, they had a line about Clamp not liking black and white things. He wanted everything to be in color.
Oh yeah.
Didn't know about that one actually. Yeah, the continuity error. Right, somebody go and get Joe Dante. Where is he?
Maybe it was somebody coloring the It's a Wonderful Life. Like maybe they aired it the black and white and got in trouble for it, and somebody was fixing their mistake.
Well, you know, the movie was being made as it was being shown, so you know, chances are good they might have been.
I also quite enjoyed what was it? Was it Frank or Fred, the horror host?
Oh, Fred.
Grandpa Fred.
Fred.
Yep.
Yeah. At first I thought it was Al Lewis for a second, and then I had
Oh
to
my
go and
God,
look
yeah.
it up, and I was like, because it's uncanny almost at first. But yeah, 1990 Al Lewis looked very different from how he did in the Days of the Monsters. But you got me.
Yeah, he showed up and I was like, is that supposed to be that kid? Like, I was for at first I thought Adam's Family, but I was like, no, that's because the grandpa in Adam's Family, or no, was there a grandpa in Adam's Family? I think I'm thinking of Uncle Fester. But then I looked up, I was like, no, Munsters, that's what I'm thinking of. The grandpa. I was like, is it supposed to be him? But no, it was just somebody dressed like him for some reason.
It was nice as well because he actually got a pretty decent arc. They sort of introduced him as this
Yeah.
down on his luck horror host who wanted to host a news program or a current affairs program, and he gets his opportunity and he does a good job, and he ends up getting what he wanted in the end. And that in itself was a nice kind of subplot that paid off. That was another thing really with this film, is there's a lot of subplots that go on, and the way they all get tied off, but they all get tied off some very subtly, which was nice. Sometimes it's just like a visual thing in the background where you go, oh, they got it, okay, that's cool, which was nice. What reminded me, actually, one of the things I needed to check was the janitor who fixed the water fountain, the micro machines man.
I was kind of wondering that. I was actually looking up Grandpa Fred because the way that Billy talks to him when he's first introduced, I wondered if he was from the original Gremlins because he talks like, oh, well, this isn't what I had envisioned. But I wasn't sure if that was within just Gremlins 2 or if that was relating back to the original Gremlins.
Which character?
Grandpa Fred.
I don't think he was in the original
No,
Gremlins.
no. He wasn't. I the way that it was said, I kind of questioned it, but then yeah, no, he wasn't in that. So, oh, this is random, but Christopher Lee's character was Dr. Catheter.
Yeah. That was another thing. The names people had, I mean, not just people, like the Church of Saint Eva Marie. The so many crazy names that they came up with. I loved it.
Oh, absolutely. And surprisingly, like late 80s, Christopher Lee had some very, very strange cinematic appearances. Gremlins 2 is his strangest one. And when you consider that he was in, what was it called? The Adventures of Captain Invincible, which was basically a film that was partly produced by Richard O'Brien, who did the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And that's like not even close to how strange he is in Gremlins 2. I think it's a testimony to just how odd Gremlins 2 actually was.
It was so much odder than I was expecting. Like I said, I was expecting a straight up sequel, and it was not. It was almost a parody of Gremlins rather than a sequel.
And that's at least what IMDb said it was sort of set out to be. So, you know, it kind of takes it and kind of flips it on its head.
Well, it worked.
Yeah, it totally did. I was looking up the guy that played the brain gremlin. It was Tony Randall. He was the one of the two odd fel or one of the two guys in The Odd Couple.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't have pictured it.
No, I mean the Aussie accent kind of takes it away, but he was in Pillow Talk. He was in Will Success Spoil Rock. What's the last name? Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter. So a lot of like comedy romances out of the 50s and 60s.
I forgot to look him up, but I thought his voice sounded familiar, but I couldn't figure out where I knew him from. But also, you mentioned the janitor. That was John Astin. And with him, I knew him from somewhere, and I figured out he was the dad in Freaky Friday, the original Freaky Friday.
Oh, okay. He also did a lot of B movie horror, I think.
He has a very long IMDb page, but the reason that I figured out I knew him was from the dad in Freaky Friday. But yeah, he had so many other roles. Like there's a series that I'm sure you guys will have known that I've just heard the name of, the Killer Tomatoes series.
Oh, so
something you guys would know about. I've never seen it, but he was in a bunch of those, it looks like.
Oh, he was also Gomez Adams in the Addams Family. The original,
that was his other big role.
And he was in Overdrawn at the Memory Bank, which is one of my favorite MST episodes. He's still alive, isn't he, actually, thinking about it? I'm pretty sure he's still alive.
Born in 1930, still kicking.
Good 93.
For him. Wow. Good for him.
I also quite liked the fact, looking at it, that the film borrowed so much directional choices from kind of like latter-day Hammer horror films. That was quite a nice choice. Like I know obviously having Lee in there gives it a certain credence, but they shoot a lot of the sort of Gremlins breeding sequences or the transformation sequences very much in the vein of those kind of 60s, 70s Hammer horror movies where it's very low angle and they use a lot of very interesting sort of color choices. So there's lots of reds and green lighting gels being used throughout. And it's nice that they kind of, they embrace that aspect of horror and cult cinema, especially for the time, because at that point in the sort of early 90s, that era of filmmaking was resurging. You obviously had things like MST3K doing the rounds, and it was kind of popular and in to go back and look at those older, now public domain films and sort of almost lampoon them for the quality they were working with. It feels like they got a lot of people who were into the counterculture of the time on board for this project in terms of trying to put across what they wanted to take on, so to speak.
Yeah. And I was surprised how many big names showed up in this. I mean, you had Hulk Hogan, you had Leonard Martin, or Maltin, not Martin, sorry. What was
Which
Dick
character?
Butkus, well, I guess there's only the four or five, but you had Frank Welker, you had Bubba Smith, you had Dick Butkus. Like it was a, and not that the movie was small, but it had a lot of well-known names from that era.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It feels almost like, and that's one of the things that I actually kind of enjoy with it. It feels almost like the malicious compliance of a studio picture. It's almost like the studios have gone, you need to make this film. And they've gone, okay, we'll make your movie. We'll make
I
your
think
movie.
That's, right, let's I think get... that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah.
Because from what I read, they were trying to do it without Joe Dante first. I don't remember exactly what happened, but eventually he signed on. Like he did not want to do a sequel, but he wanted as much control as possible. So basically, instead of making a straight-up sequel, he almost made a parody of Gremlins and horror movies in general.
Oh, absolutely. And that was actually, you've just reminded me, one of my favorite little moments in the film is when Kate does a kind of recreation of a Santa scene, but it's about Lincoln.
As soon as she started talking, I was like, is this supposed to be a parody of the scene that she already talked about with her father?
Yeah. And I also like how as the scene kind of goes on, she starts getting more emotional. Billy and the crew just sort of put their arms around her, come on, let's go, get out of here, let's go. And she's still talking as they drag her off scene.
I did also enjoy, and this is more visual gag than anything, but the fact that the revolving doors at the front, like at first the guy gets spun out, the next time like they're trying to fix him, and then at the end they're still trying to fix the front doors, like they keep going back to that, and you have like the narrator or the announcer voice kind of talking about how revolutionary they are.
I have expected them to start like sucking people in and blasting them out the other side.
But you know, and one thing too, I think it also kind of talks, at least generally, about culture as well of that era. You know, it was kind of like just kind of starting the natural food craze, organics and all that, with all the yogurt and stuff. It's like, well, are those peanut butter cups natural? And the guy's like, well, they don't have pesticides in them. Oh, well, that's different. You know, you get that whole kind of thing, and then the gremlin pops up and the M&Ms.
For me, I was absolutely captivated by a salute to luncheon meat. Give me those bologna and bean dip roll-ups any day.
I just loved that her name was Microwave Marge. That I should have mentioned at the beginning, but like years ago, I saw this movie, or at least part of it, before I saw the original Gremlins, because it was on TV at one point and I just turned on the TV and this was playing. Because I remembered like the scenes of Gizmo crawling through the vents, and I remembered the scene with Microwave Marge. And so I saw a bunch of the middle of this movie. And I think that's why I originally, back then when I was a teenager, borrowed the Gremlins movie from the library. And then I was confused as to why these scenes that I remembered seeing on TV years before weren't in it. But Microwave Marge, that whole scene was the one that stuck in my head the most, was that cooking show with the Gremlins.
I was going to say as well, did you know that for the video release of this, the cinema scene is different?
I really? Read that, but I didn't have time to look up alternate scenes. I think there might have been more than one alternate scene, because I think there was something like a longer version of the Looney Tunes opening as well.
Oh yeah, so for the home video release of the film, when the film breaks in the version that's more commonly available, instead of it doing that, like VHS static, like white noise starts creeping in across the background, and then like the lightning gremlin kind of breaks in over like over tracking lines, and you can sort of see messing with the picture and stuff, and I can't remember what happens after that. Either way, they have like another celebrity cameo, I think, who sort of like breaks through the white noise to tell him to stop messing around with the picture, and then it kind of snaps back into place and you end up with like the tracking signal thing, and it all sets back in, which I thought was a nice touch. It sort of keeps the joke fresh.
Yeah.
Because it's been so easy to just do the film gag and go with that. Yeah. But I thought it was a nice touch for the video release at least.
Yeah, I wish I had time to look up more of the alternate scenes, because I love that they would do something like that. It just seems so clever to keep it different for the video and the theater releases.
Oh, yeah.
And it was definitely a thing of that era. You wouldn't, and maybe you'd attempt something like that today, but the way that everything kind of comes out, I don't know that it would have the same effect as something would then.
I could see like a more eccentric director pushing for something like that. But as far as like anybody doing this, I don't think that they would want to keep the budget down rather than shooting multiple scenes for multiple formats.
Yeah, true. Speaking of that, the opening aerial shot of New York was from Superman 4.
Well, nobody saw
Quest
that.
For Peace.
So
yeah, Quest for Peace.
It, nobody will notice. I mean, I've seen that and I didn't notice, but I only saw it once and it was years ago.
Well, and it's a shot of New York. I mean,
yeah,
it's you would assume, okay, you know, whatever the budget would be, well, you know, they, because sometimes you'll see stock footage show up in multiple places, not necessarily, you know, Hollywood movies, but still. And I love the fact that we get Dick Miller in this. I absolutely like anytime he shows up in a movie. I guess he was in the first one as well, but he just makes me smile. He just brings so much to a movie.
They didn't attempt to explain that he, like, he died in the first one. Or didn't he get hit by a tractor or something?
Oh, it was it a harvester or a snowplow or something?
I think a snowplow.
Because they keep teasing it throughout the film that like the plow isn't starting up properly and you have to do something special to get it working. And then near the end of the film, they do, and it runs him over.
Yeah. So that, like, at first I was kind of annoyed that they just kind of blew it off. But then I started thinking about it after I realized that this was a live action cartoon. I was like, yeah, that kind of fits with this movie. Just do something ridiculous and say, oh, he just got hurt bad. Even though I should go back and watch it, but I could have sworn he was dead.
Oh, he totally died in that. That.
But he was a great character, so.
It was just so many little references that really sort of won me over. I mean, like, there was The Wizard of Oz.
I love that one.
The guy melting.
And the Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, but they do deep cuts. Like, some of the sequences that they build with the footage of Bat Gremlin when he's flying around New York City are basically shot-for-shot remakes of scenes from Q the Winged Serpent.
Oh, seriously?
Which is like, the scenes where Q is flying around New York, and if you put them side by side with Spider Gremlin, it's basically the same sort of shot setup. So I think they even use the same backing footage for it.
That's amazing.
But it's just a clear sign that some of the people working on this film like knew their deep cuts, because like you know, next to nobody really watched Q when it first came out.
Did you catch the King Kong one?
Yes, yeah, I did. That was a nice touch.
What was
it's
that
just little
one?
things,
I don't remember.
You know.
The one really goofy gremlin with the weird eyes that kind of looks like Gizmo. He's up on top of like a model of a building, and there's like a mobile with a whole bunch of like biplanes of the 20s or 30s. He's kind of
Okay.
like sitting there, like he kind of got stuck in the mobile, and then they pull him down off of that. It's when Kate goes to grab what she thinks is Gizmo, but it's not.
The first batch of like four, I really didn't like the designs. They were hideous. The one with buck teeth and the googly eyes, it was that should have been a clue right there that this was more of a parody than a sequel.
Well, I think the
Yeah.
Google Eyes one was literally just there to kind of like throw off Kate,
Yeah.
so you get the whole like craziness at home. Like that whole corn eating scene was awesome. I eat corn like
That's
that.
Do
like corn.
you throw chicken at people as well?
Yes. But just
Oh.
dry. I get the biggest bucket from KFC I can get, and then I just walk down the street and toss it at people.
That is decadence at its finest.
Yes. Hey, if people want chicken, they can have chicken. If they don't want it,
Seems fair. Seems fair. Actually, looking into this, I realized as part of the writing team, and this might explain a lot. One of the writers for this film was Charles Haz. He probably is most famously known for helping to write Tron. But
Ah.
what set me off is thinking, okay, we've probably got some keen brains behind it, is he also wrote Matinee,
Ooh, nice.
which is like the love letter to B movie cinema. So, like, it suddenly made a lot more sense why all of these, in references to obscure 1920s, 30s, and 40s cult films were suddenly like really subtly hidden in the film. It's because the guy who wrote it was like one of the biggest William Castle fans this side of the Atlantic.
Oh, speaking
So,
of that, they actually Dante at one point wanted to have a scene like where the theater is at that would kind of do like what they did with Tingler or any other William Castle project, where there was something that would attack the audience, like gremlins would come in and attack the audience for like the premiere.
oh yeah, oh, that would have been awesome.
That would have been fun to be there then.
Oh yeah.
I thought the puppeteering as well got a real upgrade in this film. There's a
Oh
lot
yeah.
more, they're very much more dexterous, and
Yeah.
Gizmo gets a lot more to kind of do, and the green screening work that they do where they have him like dancing on the table
That was
and
so
doing his Rambo
cute.
impression. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I feel like Gizmo was cuter in this movie, like noticeably and purposefully cuter.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, the one thing that annoyed me is they hurt Gizmo again. They locked him in a vent. They run a train at him. Just stop hurting the little guy. He's gorgeous. You need to protect him from the evils of the world.
They needed to give him a reason to go Rambo.
Yes.
That was so cute.
And it was another one where they weaved that arc in, because like one of the first things the film shows you is him watching Rambo.
Yeah.
It's just like,
And the line
it's.
about becoming war, and then him having a little flashback, and then putting on the
Having
headband.
the little Gizmo training montage where he's lifting a single dumbbell. Oh, he's built a crossbow out of paper clips. That's adorable.
What did you guys think of the girl gremlin?
Positively Bugs Bunny-esque
There,
was
oh, you know what? That's about right. Just top to bottom.
I
yeah
hated her lips. They were so creepy. Just the way they like moved independently of her face.
Well, that is how women's lips actually work. I can attest to
That could almost be a horror movie in and of itself.
that. The gremlin's lips came back. The whole musical montage part where like they all put up the little pieces and they become the floor. Like some of the editing stuff was incredibly interesting. Like it starts out as kind of what looks like a wall piece, and then it turns out that it's a floor. Where the video or where the movie screen turns into one of the screens from Clamp's office. There's so many little of those editing moments that are so cool.
And I just liked that they did like the whole musical number thing. It almost
Yes.
reminded me of the Muppet Show. Like the way the Muppet Show opens, the opening number,
Oh,
with all
yeah.
the gremlins. I don't know if it was supposed to be a nod to that, but that's what it reminded me of.
Quite possibly. But yeah, just the scope of everything about this movie, it took what was good about the first one and it just blew it up.
Absolutely. I think that was kind of the way I kind of looked at it as well, was it basically felt like a slightly more child-oriented take over the first film, because the first film was nasty. You had like gremlins in the blender and gremlins being blown up by microwaves, and there's a couple of moments of that in this one, but yeah, I feel like it's much, I think they realized that the key audience for this was like younger kids, so they've sort of angled it a bit more over to it being a more kid-friendly take on the series.
Well,
But God
I
bless the
know that.
80s, they certainly had that trauma in there, so
Yeah. See, I'm not sure if I would, and I agree that it definitely was like that cartoony violence would definitely be more kid-esque. But as a general rule, even in the 90s or wait, late 80s, early 90s, I have a hard time thinking that this would have been a kid's movie just because of like you look at the references, you look at what all goes down. I don't know. I understand your point, but I don't know that I would label this as kids.
I don't
Yeah,
think it
no.
probably was, because this one was PG-13, and PG-13 movies were a lot of
Darker.
dark. Yeah, darker would be
Yeah.
a better word. But like, especially comparing the two, like the original Gremlins was one of the reasons for the PG-13 rating to be made. But if somebody had just showed me these two movies and said one is PG and one is PG-13, which is which, I would have swapped them around. Because
That's
this one
fair.
did have some moments that were like gross and borderline horrifying, but nothing compared to the first one, I don't think.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I guess, and maybe it's looking at it with 2024 eyes as compared to like 1980 or
I
1990
mean,
eyes, but
the make or break for me was whether an old lady got propelled through a window by a stairlift or not. So,
that is a good point.
yeah, there was not nearly as much elder abuse in this one.
I mean, if nothing else, the elder was, kind of incorporated into the gremlins. I mean, the fact that Grandpa Frank was able to kind of like be the reporter in the shadows watching the gremlins do their thing, like especially from the vents.
Not even in the shadows. Like he was just he went and interviewed the one.
But that was the most intelligent one too, so you're going to get more off of him.
That was another thing. Like I'm obviously knowing now that this is a parody, but like at the time when I was first watching this, I hadn't quite figured that out. I was like, this is kind of ridiculous that he is sitting down to an interview with this, I obviously a much smarter gremlin, but all these other ones, they're still going crazy all around them. Like, why? What's stopping them from attacking Grandpa Fred?
I just liked how casually he pulled a revolver out and shot one of them. We just want to be
That's just
civilized.
what
That's all we want is to be civilized and have dinettes. Comfy.
I really liked the brain gremlin. He was hilarious. I was not ex like when they he started drinking the brain serum, because you had the thing where like the one is drinking some sort of vegetable thing and he turns into like a fruit monster, and then there's the bat monster, and like the one started drinking, I expected him to like his head to like grow up and turn into a brain. I didn't expect him to like become almost like a little human. Just become very smart, which I thought was kind of genius.
I mean, he was kind of like the Lorax. He spoke for the gremlins because the others couldn't. Anything, he should really be called the
Lorax with
Lorax gremlin. Well, he's a
a
Lorax with a gun. I mean,
gun. Now
it was the 90s.
that sounds like one of those horror movie parodies that are not parodies, like the Grinch horror movie and the Winnie the Pooh horror movie and the Peter Pan horror movie. That sounds like the next thing they should make. The Lorax with a gun.
It sounds like something that would be put out during one of those pitch meetings where they're trying to come up with new movies. So it's like Lorax with a gun. Sheep with a musket.
I mean, a Lorax with a gun would more effectively protect the
True.
trees. I kind of want this to be a thing now.
You have your assignment, Agent John. Go do it.
I am the Lorax. I speak for the trees, and with my AK-47, I'll take out your knees. Michael Bay presents Danny DeVito as the Lorax.
Oh, that would be perfect. I would totally watch this.
Movie studios, get on this. We require you to. Give us also, a finder's fee.
This seems actually doable. I could see Danny DeVito loving something like that.
Oh, yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Bat Gremlin.
From the makers of Hobo with a Shotgun and Trolls World Tour.
Oh no, but did we break John?
I think we may
almost.
I am sorry, by the way, guys. I could do with the jumping away in a little bit if that's okay. Oh, it's yep.
That's fine.
It's coming up to time.
We don't need to go through the whole movie. I feel like this movie is basically almost a series of gags rather than a cohesive story. Like, it has a cohesive story, but it's almost just like a vehicle for gags rather than trying to tell a cohesive tale about the gremlins returning.
Absolutely. It's like I say, I love the fact that it's painfully self-aware. And like I said earlier, it really feels like a lesson in malicious compliance. It's like, oh, you're going to make the movie, are you? Okay, well, I'll make your movie. All right. Get me Chuck Jones. What, Tex Avery's dead? Get me Chuck Jones. Right.
I can imagine that was part of his thought process for half the stuff in this thing.
I could agree.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it came out at just the right time because, like, another thing to bear in mind is that kind of acidic counterculture was really gaining force because things like The Simpsons was on the air at this point and was really starting to pick up steam, and they kind of mastered that art of kind of self-aware, you know, in references and sort of acidic tone of humor.
Yeah.
I think it caught the right crest of the wave where that kind of tone was vogue, and there was a lot of people in the industry who could do that type of humor very well, and they sort of just brought them all into the fold at just the right time.
I would definitely agree. It was definitely a place and time thing, but I do think that it holds up pretty well as well.
Yeah.
Like, you can watch it now and it's still goofy and weird, and it's even if you don't necessarily know all of the references, it still is just, it's so random, it's hilarious in its own right.
Yes. Random is the perfect description for this movie.
I would 100% agree.
So many things in there that you don't expect. They just randomly happen. Like, I could not have predicted this movie, what this movie became, just from watching the opening scenes. It just got crazier and crazier and crazier as it went on.
Agreed.
Oh, yes.
And I was just looking it up. It was ranked 33 in Empire Magazine's 50 Greatest Ever Movie Sequels.
I could see that, yeah.
Yeah, I could go with that. It's very subversive, which,
yes.
You know, the greats usually are.
I would agree.
Okay, well, that's probably a good place to close this one out. This was a crazy movie. I'm really glad we did this one. When I watched it, I needed the ridiculousness, even though I was very confused for a while before I finally figured out what exactly this movie was. But it's a very fun movie.
Oh, definitely.
Very much.
Definitely. I do need to check out the new Gremlins TV series as well, because I haven't seen much of that. It's on streaming exclusively, isn't it? So it's kind of, from the UK, it's kind of hard to find certain programs because they make them sort of region exclusive. So I'll have to dig that out and see what that's all about. Because I can't imagine where they'll take a Gremlins TV series after Gremlins 2. Like,
I think I read that it was a prequel.
Right.
Like it was, I don't know, Baby Gizmo or something. I don't know.
Aww. He's somehow even smaller and cuter.
Aww. Well, you know that they're probably not going to put him on a dartboard or run him over with a train, but he'll probably be used for, I don't know, on a foosball table. They're gonna use him on a foosball table.
Well, that might be a fun one to do a podcast on too, some point.
Yeah.
Because I would like to watch that show as well. I want to catch up on a bunch of animated series this year. So if you want to do that one, we could plan on that for the future at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would give me an excuse to force myself to add something else to my watch list.
Oh, Dan, it looks like it aired on CBBC and BBC iPlayer as of
Oh,
October
fab.
30th of last year. So,
I'll get on that then. Yeah, sure. I'd be absolutely down to do that. Like I say, both of these films have been really, really good fun. Probably the only caveat I really had with the whole thing is that I feel, at least from my own perspective, that I'd have to be in a bit more of a specific headspace to enjoy two over one.
yeah.
But yeah, if I was in that headspace, two's like the perfect remedy for it. It just scratches that itch, that kind of, like I say, Tex Avery, Chuck Jones, Looney Tunes zaniness itch so well.
Yes, definitely.
I would agree. It was excellent. Highly enjoyable. I don't think you can compare the two, honestly, because they are, even though you've got similar characters, they are such different experiences.
Yeah, no, it didn't feel like when I went into this, I was expecting something very tonally similar to Gremlins. And that's why it took me so long to like fully figure out that that's not what I was getting. And once I got that out of it, then I could really enjoy the movie.
Absolutely.
Well, until next time, do you guys want to let people know where they can find you if they want more from you, Dan?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really do appreciate it, as always. You can find me on YouTube under TYTD Reviews. We are currently in the middle of a new season that's rolling out very slowly, and that should take us up to June. And I'm also available on Twitter under TYTD Reviews. And I recently put out a Twitch channel that streams everything I've ever done 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if you head over to Twitch and put TYTD Reviews in, you'll get a non-stop stream that runs, I think, to 96 hours and then loops back of absolutely everything I've ever done ever. So yeah, check me out if you can. And Jonathan, thank you again so much for having me on. It's always a blast to hang with you guys.
Yeah, no problem. It's really fun to talk about these. What about you, Nikki?
You can find me here on YouTube at Trivial Theater. I do a wide array of random obscure straight up bad movies. I just put out Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter, and up next is a collab on The Hottie and the Naughty. What happens after that, we'll have to see if it's all dependent upon whether I can survive editing Hottie and Naughty. Anyway, yeah, come by, say hi. I always got something up that's new.
Okay, well, we will see you next time, probably for the Gremlins cartoon.
Dum dum dum!
Bum bum.
Thanks for listening to iHeartMovies. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and follow my co-hosts as well. My link tree and all of our links will be in the description below. If you want more of my content, all my podcasts are available on YouTube as well as most podcast platforms. If you enjoyed this show, check out one of the other podcasts or check out my Patreon for bonus and extended episodes you won't find anywhere else. We'll be back soon with another brand new episode, so thanks for listening and we'll see you next time. Thank you.